That means it's time for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Beautiful day today, and it's kind of fun. We left the triple digits in Boulder Creek to get down to a nice 68 here in Sanity Cruz.
That's right. We came down to our cloud. We didn't get off of our cloud. We got onto it.
Yeah. How's it going over there in San Fran, Bobby?
It's cloudy. Fog, you know.
Fog, oh yes. Nice winter weather in the summer of San Francisco, yeah. Yeah, I've heard about that.
I'm not, no triple digits here, right? That's for sure.
Okay, well, good. Well, your mind will be nice and sharp with that crisp, cold weather. So, yeah, lots to report this week. Plus, we have a guest on for the second hour, Annalise Schlesinger, who is affectionately known as a death doula. She helps people transition to the other side.
Yeah.
And has a very interesting career and has done other things related that we're going to talk to her about. She also wrote a book on the
art and science of caregiving. Yeah.
The art and science of caregiving.
Yeah. She has a really great set of tools both for people who find themselves caregiving to, say, loved ones and family members, or people who are maybe trying to anticipate their own needs and make it easier on their families. Anyway,
so that's
her
the second
book
hour.
Is full of beautiful stories followed by valuable worksheets and links. So
yeah, that's kind of fun. And meanwhile, or at the same time, shall we say, I'm just attaching a file for a show I just edited for the Saturday Night Alive TV show about alien contact.
Oh, boy, that was a great show, I have to say.
Oh, amazing.
You know, the
amazing.
Saturday yeah. Night Alive crew, which is made of some friends of ours from the Health and Harmony Festival and from the Strange Universe, people who've been on the cutting edge of remarkable phenomena on planet Earth, have been doing a Zoom show every Saturday night since the beginning of COVID.
Since the lockdown.
And they just did a really interesting show that's dedicated to looking at what's current in the UFO question.
Both new and old people in the field, like Whitley Strieber is probably the most classic.
Yes, Whitley Strieber. And also Danny Sheehan was there.
Danny was very involved with the new Pentagon revelations.
Right.
And he's
right. Steve Bassett was there.
That's right, Steve Bassett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's always interesting.
Yeah, so we've got old school meets new school. We also had the Ray Alien supported, let's see, what was their?
That's out of Ottawa.
In Ottawa, there is a group that has been collecting members who want to create a galactic embassy to welcome the ETs.
Yeah, there's two basic schools. Those are looking at the craft and looking at the outside world, and those are looking at how to contact using consciousness. Yeah. And they're two very different scenarios until recently. Now they're starting to converge where the inner people meet the outer people.
Right. And yeah, we can meditate and make a spacecraft appear is kind of the new state of the art.
Yeah, from watching them and for them landing in your head. So, fascinating show. We'll post a link on our Dr. Future Links page in case you want to know more. Meanwhile, in the outer world of outer space, it was kind of cool seeing Virgin Galactic succeed.
That's
weekend,
right. This was a really great week in space.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if
so much was happening.
If people have not checked out the Unity spacecraft yet, I suggest that you go and Google it because it may well be the most beautiful actual spacecraft that has ever been flown. It's really sci-fi. It's so beautiful. And when it gets to the Kármán line, or it doesn't get to the Kármán line, but when it gets to its designated end
above 50,
atmosphere.
50 miles is considered space by NASA.
Right. Above 50 miles because at that height, there's not enough air to lift a traditional airplane because it's too rarified. It's too much space.
Well, the Kármán line is 62 miles up. It's
and the Kármán line is a line above which you can't see meteors because they can't ignite.
So no trails.
No trails of the meteors. That's right. They're just floating in the ice field.
What was kind of interesting was that Elon Musk visited Sir Richard Branson at 3 a.m. before he went to the spacecraft.
Yeah, that was funny.
Hung out in his kitchen.
Elon hadn't gone to bed yet, and Sir Richard was just waking up for the big day.
Yeah.
So, Elon purchased a ticket.
No, he put down a $10,000 deposit.
Yeah. That's a cheap deposit.
For a $250,000 flight,
Sure he's good for it.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because, you know, Jeff Bezos is going up on the 20th of this month on his own spaceship. Is only about 185 miles away in Texas from the New Mexico spaceport where Branson did his flight.
Wow, maybe the new space race is going to be from state to state with people opening up their own spaceports.
Well, that's thinking ahead, Mrs. Future. But no, so far, I think we got Texas, we got Florida, we got California, Vandenberg, we've got Wallops Island in Virginia.
And we've got New Mexico.
And New Mexico, right.
The spaceport.
Yeah. What was a little disappointing for me was that, you know, I had in anticipation of all this. A couple of years ago, we had actually bought some stock in Virgin Galactic. And I thought that when Richard Branson would go up, that the stock value would go up too.
But oh, come on, honey.
The I was wrong. I was. It fell 17% after he goes up. Now, what WTF?
Well, I'm taking a DeFi class with Brian Rose.
Yeah, you understand investments.
And what I just learned from the trader's mouth, which, you know, I've never been a trader, but I just learned that the difference between a trader and your average person who's hoping for a big win in the gambling stock market is that the traders buy on the hope and sell on the fact. And so when the price drops the day after a big event, that is because all the people who were in the know bought it when it was low and held on to it until the big event, and then they're taking their profits. So you can't read into it that there's anything wrong. And the press is making it sound like, oh, yeah, the reason the stock fell is because they're selling their stocks now to raise some money. Well, you know, that's
Virgin
what people
Galactic
do. That's
sold
how they get money out of the stock market.
$500 million worth of stock. To use the money for, I guess, further R&D and development.
Sure. Well, you take profits. That's what I've been learning in this crypto distributed.
That's right. You've been on
class.
Every day. Mrs. Future has been studying crypto.
You don't
crypto.
Just sit on your investments forever. You find out when's the best time to sell them and when's the best time to buy them. That's how you get profits out.
Yeah. What's the name of this class you're doing?
The DeFi Academy with Brian Rose. And it is definitely...
That's from London Real, right?
Fascinating. Very Brian Rose. That's who we're talking about. Yeah. He used to be a trader before he got into the broadcast business. Oh, sorry. We got our break right here. I thought there was music. Better. Here you go.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Mrs. Future was just talking about her new class with London Real on crypto and something called DeFi. Do you want to just give us a quick description of what this is about?
Okay, sure. Well, DeFi stands for distributed finance, and it's particularly with respect to the Bitcoin, Ethereum, crypto asset marketplace.
And playing that marketplace. Right.
Learning to invest wisely and to trade like a pro instead of like a newbie, which I'm a newbie.
Now, Brian Rose,
so
used to be like a day trader or something?
Yes,
like
yes. He had a 20-year career from the 90s till around 2010 where he was working on the Chicago Exchange, among other places. He was trading. He was trying to profit from options on treasury bonds and things like that and doing it for big institutional investors. And
gotcha.
So he really understands the market. He's one of these people who gives an example of the concept. Like he's trying to teach you to trade an option, right? How do you buy an option trade? Mm-hmm. And so he gives an example about how he was like borrowing treasuries and getting them, investing them in the overnight market and collecting the difference of the 6% spread by only paying 3%. So he's giving these like really complicated examples to teach you these other complicated concepts.
Applying them to the crypto world. Right?
Yes, yes. And saying, now you understand how it works in crypto, right? So this is my experience. My experience is like, okay, I'm taking notes, but I think I'm going to Google that when we're done, you know?
Are you still doing crypto, Bobby?
Yes, I'm following Ethereum because all the DeFi contracts are actually on the Ethereum blockchain, or they're going to be, it looks like, because the Bitcoin doesn't have enough space to put contracts on its blockchain. So.
Right, yeah, it doesn't do that part of it. It allows you to mine coins.
Yeah.
It only does one thing. You know, most people say that for now, Ethereum and Bitcoin are the two big things to always base your portfolio on. Don't give it up and be smart about how you buy and sell it.
At the same time, you are experimenting with other newer cryptos.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I will when I think I have an
start
idea.
With Ethereum.
But I'm a natural conservative investor. You know, I'm not one of these gamblers who's just going to say, yeehaw, let's see if we can get a 1,000% return tomorrow. A lot of people are. A lot of people think it's a casino. But I don't do well in casinos, and that's not how I will be
Even though you are from Las Vegas. Yeah,
yeah, that's how I know that I don't do well in casinos. I grew up close to the source.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, good. There's a little update on that. Appreciate that. Uh-huh. On other news, Tesla finally began shipping their full self-driving beta version 9. It had been delayed for a very long time.
And you mean their autonomous software?
Yes.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you were talking about a new car.
Full self-driving, they call it. But it's definitely not autonomous, but certainly advanced driver assist.
Right. Yeah, they turned on all of the beta features.
Yeah.
Right. So what's involved?
If you had purchased the FSD option, the full self-driving option, then you're going to get a lot of these features that will allow the autopilot to do advanced driver assist things on non-highway streets. It looks like they're not allowing it on the highway. Seems like highway driving would be easier
in
some respects.
You think.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they want you to speed on the highway. You know? Maybe that's where you want to have control. So, sorry. Everywhere else, if the car's in charge, you're going to be like pretty bored.
Well, yeah, and I'd say this has been anticipated. To say that Tesla fans have been anticipating this update would be an understatement. It's been something that's been expected and wanted for some time now. As to whether or not it's ready for prime time, Musk says that the new beta addresses most known issues, but I like this one. But there will be unknown issues, so please be paranoid.
Oh, good advice. It's always good advice when it comes to technology. We just finished watching The Terminator, huh?
Well, Terminator 2. I saw it again just for Netflix had been pushing it. So I thought, well, refresh that. And that was
right.
Now, that was advanced autonomy.
That's right. That's right. Be afraid. Be paranoid.
Well, yes, they said it might do the wrong thing at the worst time.
Yeah, like the few crashes that there have been. You know,
yeah, so avoid
thought that a big white truck was the clear sky and just kept barreling ahead.
One of the big things is that they've improved their camera in the cabin so that to monitor the driver attentiveness.
Oh, that's good. I think they should also put in a little voice so that if the computer is confused, instead of just taking its best guess, it should ask the driver.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can be very helpful to these baby AIs as they're trying to learn to move around the planet on their own.
Yeah, I guess so. They like input. That's one of the things that Tesla does have is this incredible network of Tesla vehicles that are all feeding daily information into the grid.
Yeah. Well, I think they'll be much smarter if the people programming them recognize that one of the sensors they can use, in addition to the LIDAR and whatever other things they're paying attention to, is the human, right? The human is a sensor. It's probably the best sensor they've got in the car.
Well, we're multi-sensors.
That's right. Right? That's what makes us
sensors.
The best.
Plus
at least.
The processing ability to combine the five.
Plus ESP.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think that the programmers should allow that and should be working on that interface. I bet they'd make a lot more progress.
Well, the thing is that people will be people, and apparently it's easy to trick the Tesla system into thinking there's somebody in the driver's seat when actually you're in the back partying.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
People are smarter than cars.
They figure out the limitations.
So the cars should be asking the people, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Did I just get it right, Gasm?
Did you? I don't know. How does it feel?
Well, you know, you didn't exactly say, how'd that feel, honey? But
did you like that thing right?
Is that good? I'm just deciding to enjoy it. You bet.
Yeah. I can either be right or have my pleasure.
Sometimes you can do both. So.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Yeah, those are the best.
Okay, well, some other AI developments. Researchers have taught a drone to recognize and hunt down meteorites.
Ooh.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Planetary scientists estimate that each year about 500 meteorites survive. They
make it
go
all
through
the way
the atmosphere
Earth
and hit the surface. Mm-hmm. But most of them are really small. Less than 2% of them are actually recovered.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to find it. It's like trying to find a speeding bullet.
Yeah.
Where'd it go?
Well, yeah, well,
over
we do have
somewhere.
These massive things called oceans, you know.
Yeah,
you
right.
know. So that's a lot of space right there. Yeah. There's a new technology that has been applied to drones. And just kind of neat. There's also a whole network of people that are always looking for meteors. There's a Sky network that are constantly
Skynet?
Skynet? That's the Terminator. No, different Skynet. Doppler radar detecting meteorite falls, so you can tell when a fall is happening. Mm-hmm. All Sky networks, they're called. And they constantly are looking out for meteorites. Now, people have dash cams and security cameras focused partially on the sky as well. And they also add to the network mm-hmm. for looking at potential meteorite falls.
You know, I have my notifications set for Skywatch 2, and they always let me know if there's a meteor sighting. Like, there's a big one coming up on August 1st.
I mean, like a storm, a meteor.
A sky show. Yeah.
The Perseid? Is that what's coming up?
I think so. I think it might be the Perseids. I just remember seeing the date. I kind of don't remember the name of the meteor shower.
Well, in this case, we've got drones, and drones are really good at flying a grid search pattern. So they can be looking at a dry lake bed, like in Nevada, I think is where they're testing this. And they can look at what they call a strewn field. In this case, they're training the AI on board the drone to look for meteors and differentiate them from some normal rocks. So you know what they do? They put down meteors in the dry lake bed so they know which ones are meteors. Hmm. And they train the AI to recognize the differences between meteors and regular rocks.
That really sounds complicated. I didn't know people were wanting to find meteors that badly. What's so great about finding meteors?
Bobby, you tell her, Bobby. Why should you want to find meteors?
It's a big business. It's like
Well, I know. I know all of the rock shops have their little basket of meteorites, right? But that can't be the reason why.
People want something that's extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
Right. You know? That's
something
right.
From somewhere
else.
I
mean, there are entire religions that, you know, like bow to their meteorite every day, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it came from heaven. Must be good.
Yes.
And meteors are pretty interesting. There's some unusual rocks out there. And you can tell where they came from by looking at a meteor, too. You can see whether or not it's from the asteroid belt or the Oort field.
If you show it to the AI, right? Like, you couldn't show it to me and know that.
Be able to know where it's from.
You know, pick up a rock, and it's like, that's a rock.
Yeah.
It came from the ground.
So the idea of training them, you know, with actual meteors is really important because there's a lot of false positives until they get good at telling the difference between regular rocks and meteors. They're very optimistic about this training program that they're using. It seems to be working, and having a machine learning classifier system will simplify and increase the yield of meteors from people doing this. It can fall at any time, and the system needed some kind of detection algorithm that was quick and able to work with many types of meteors on different types of terrains. That's the other thing, is not always fall on lake beds. They fall in wooded areas, too.
This AI has a really, really different personality than that AI that you played for us a while ago that was sort of able to have questions answered with a human being.
Right.
Like, if this AI were in an AI dating app, it would definitely be kind of nerdy.
Yeah. Do you like meteors?
Do you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, let me see your data set.
Yes, wait till you see my Oort meteorite. It's very pretty.
Ooh.
It's got some platinum in it. You like that?
Shiny.
Be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. And we have Sean on the line, I believe. Isn't that right, Mrs. Future?
Sean from Live Oak.
Hey, Sean, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi. How's it going this week?
Oh, pretty good.
All right.
And I guess the rhetorical question is why we should be interested in meteors.
Yeah, what? Why are you? Yourself?
I was just kidding around. I like meteors.
Yeah,
but one of the things is, I don't know if you remember this, but when they had one of these meteorites that they... thought that came from an impact that off of Mars may have had biological fossils in it.
Absolutely. That's right. The original Earthlings from Mars might have been coming over on a little meteorite.
Yeah. Plus the initial formation of our solar system. This is sort of also the leftover material, so we get a chance to examine that.
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty interested in that, too. And I imagine that the level of detail of the crystalline structure of the minerals in the meteorite must tell a very interesting story to those who have the eyes to see it. I don't really know what they're looking at. That's quite a advanced level of detail.
Yes, outer space is as complicated as the geology on the planet here, if not more so.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's thousands and thousands of near-Earth objects, as well as what's out between Mars and Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other caches, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can tell a lot when they burn up in the atmosphere, too, by the colors that they put out when they're coming down. You can kind of tell a little bit about them from that, too. Have you ever gone on a meteor hunt, Sean?
Not directly, but I did go to that big crater in Arizona.
Oh,
Yeah. The one you can see off the freeway?
You have to drive off a ways, but...
Yeah.
Did you hike around?
Yeah. And that's the one thing. It's quite something else to be one of these big geological features when you're there yourself. You know, you get the pictures and they're impressive, but it's nothing like when you're there.
Yeah, I bet you feel really small, huh? You get the sense that the planet being bombarded by a meteor can be catastrophic.
Yeah.
I think it was the Andromeda strain where they hypothesized that an alien virus hitchhiked a ride on one and caused a pandemic on the planet. I think that was the brilliant idea for that story.
Sure. It survived in space and then was highly transmissible on Earth.
Yeah, right.
You call it conceit for a movie.
Yeah. Though, generally speaking, there is a topic called panspermia.
Yeah.
Which talks about how living organisms can hitch rides on rocks, among other things. Comets.
Hold on for dear life.
Yeah. And there's also some evidence to suggest that Martian rocks have been able to carry microbes from Mars to here.
Do you think that you could throw a rock from the surface of Mars and get it off the planet?
Or
it would
manually?
Have to be a rocket-type explosion, right?
Some kind of rail gun or something, maybe, but I don't know.
Baseball bat? No?
I don't think so. You know, Mars is a pretty beefy planet. Maybe the moon, you know, the moon's a lot smaller. You should probably get stuff off of that. 1/6 gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, Randall Carlson was also doing a study of the Chicago fire.
Yeah.
And he found that all sorts of other big fires occurred simultaneously.
With the Chicago fire. You mean suggesting that it might have been a meteor strike of some sort?
Well, this is completely different. We do know that comets have lots of methane gas on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So on the comet's tail, ejecting methane gas.
Oh, so it's kind of like a lightning strike, but it's a meteorite strike.
No, what it is the methane gas from a comet doesn't dissipate in a vacuum. If there's enough of it, it sticks together by gravitational mutual attraction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have this sort of this...
this fuel. This bomb. Of,
yeah. And what Randall Carlson was speculating is that actually this made Earth fall and it got ignited, and that's what started the firestorm.
When was that big fire?
Like, Chicago fire? Or the,
yeah. I think it was 1860s. Some,
yeah, 1875.
The O'Leary lantern?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm trying to find this, and when I find it, I'm going to send the article to you. But it's thing is, right now, if with all this time passed, you just don't have the forensic evidence to prove this one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to speculate about, but...
But the thing is...
It'll make a good sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But the thing is that... there was, at the same time the Chicago fire happened, over in Wisconsin and in areas maybe about 200 miles radius, there were other fires that were started all at the same time.
Oh, so a little scattershot, huh? That's interesting.
Hmm. I'll find the article. I'm going to
shoot it over. We enjoy your stuff, Sean, really. We're definitely lovers of speculative historic science.
Yeah.
I'm always a proponent of more awareness of what's in our local solar system environment, because I think that as a technological species, if you want to keep surviving as a technological species, you're going to have to protect your planet.
Yes.
Yeah, and seeing the planet as part of the larger ecosystem of the solar system makes a lot of sense, too.
Sure.
You know, it is every bit as important as what goes on the planet, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, there's all kinds of dangers we can think about ahead of time.
I think if we understand the sun a little bit better and the cycles that it goes through, if a sudden increase in temperature of the sun affects the weather, it's going to affect it on all the planets.
Yeah.
And it's going to create changes there that the little meteor impacts will move those changes from one planet to another and cause some interactive dynamics between the planets as well. And the asteroid belt, well, I think of it as kind of like the Home Depot of the solar system. It's got all kinds of stuff there. We're sending a probe there in 2023, a NASA's probe, to investigate Psyche, which is a very unusual giant asteroid. And it seems to be made out of metal. Yeah. And it could be very valuable metal. Could be gold and platinum as part of it, and more than what's on the Earth, because they're thinking that this might be a planetary core. And as we know from our own understanding of planetary geology, that most of the metals are towards the core, outside of the range of our ability to dig down deep enough below the mantle. And that's still on virgin territory as far as humanity is concerned, and that's where most of the metals of the planet live. Fascinating area. And we can't access it, but here the Psyche is floating around in the asteroid belt. We can send a probe and look at a planetary core firsthand, close up. Amazing.
All right. Well, thanks for all that stuff. Got anything else, Sean?
I sent you a link last week, and I was just wondering if you had a chance to see it. It was where Randall Carlson was up in the Scablands, and they were discussing Devil's Canyon.
I got it on my list, but I haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah, Dr. Fuger's been pretty engaged this week. He had to do some edits for
for the aliens. I had to edit aliens.
That's right. Spent a lot of time with the aliens this week.
Well, maybe the next time I call and you have a chance to see it, we can compare notes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, check in, and well, I'd be happy to discuss that with you.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Okay. Because you know what we've been watching? Yeah. We've been watching Clayton's Farm.
Clayton's Farm on Amazon Prime. You seen that? He was a non-farmer, had a lot of money, though, but so he went into farming, and he's discovering how complicated it is. It's really hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It will definitely satisfy any yen sheeping that people might have for retiring to a farm.
Oh, man. We do have a story this week on autonomous farm.
Yeah.
When you see a show like that, you wonder, how can a farm be autonomous with so many things to pay attention to?
Well, actually, I think you see a show like that and you see how farmers are pretty mechanical in the way that they are managing their time and managing their land and figuring out what to do on what day. I mean, they are very programmed, surprisingly so.
And there's a lot of technology involved with farming.
And a lot of technology. That's right.
So this autonomous farm, though, they're saying that this will, that it's very close, that's closer than you realize in your ability to have an automated farm at this point.
Oh, well, do tell. Give us all the details.
You have to set it up pretty much in advance as a farm, because the robots pick lettuce or pick celery and things like that are somewhat specific to the way they move. They have to be really tuned into
That goes with the territory. I mean, every robot can do one thing. Robots are not people. You can't just get the same robot to do every field. You have to figure out how is your strawberry going to get planted, and that's one robot. And how is your berry going to get picked, and that's another robot. And right?
Well, these latest developments are an experiment of a fully automated farm created at a cost of $20 million. Doesn't seem like a lot for a big farm. Mm-hmm. 20. From what I've seen, they've been spending on trying to get an old farm reactivated. That's like to be expected to spend that kind of money. But here you could build a fully automated farm for a cost of $20 million. Mm-hmm. It's called a hands-free project.
This picture from this fully automated farm reminds me of a sci-fi movie that Bruce Damer and I both love. It was very formative for us, called Silent Running.
Uh-huh.
And it was about a farm on a space platform that was orbiting the Earth after the Earth was destroyed, right? It was kind of an early ecology sci-fi film.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
It left the last...
Yeah, there was a primitive version of this.
Forest on Earth.
Yeah, 1970s
being tended by little robots.
Yeah, little eco-domes in space environment. Yeah. Well, this is 1,900 acres, and it will serve as a demonstration of robotics and AI and farming. And there will be drones, there will be robotic tractors, there will be harvesters, and sensors for looking at such things as gases in the atmosphere, like carbon dioxide, and mm-hmm. all kinds of other metrics. They'll be all paid attention to by both humans mm-hmm. and humans augmented by AI intelligences mm-hmm. that tune into the various aspects of farming.
Sure.
So the idea is that it will be hands-free farming in the future will take farmers out of the field and in front of screens.
Right.
It's a new way to do food production. Vertical farms in cities will be possible. Alt meats are already cutting carbon emissions compared to traditional animal farming. It affects not just plants, but animal farming as well.
Cool.
Fascinating. So we got a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do, and we also have to go to a break. So stay tuned, Mike. We're going to come right back out in about 3 minutes. And here's some words from our sponsors, and Dr. Future Show will be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the show. So we got a question about the name of this farm. It's called Food Agility. CEO Richard Norton.
And you can go to the Dr. Future Show website, www.drfutureshow.com, on the links page, and you can go check it all out yourself.
Yes, and we'll send this to Michael Olson, because I know he's going to like it for his show.
Right, the food chain. Who's eating who?
So we got a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. We have a report from the courthouse.
The courthouse, huh?
Mike,
what's going down at
the
courthouse?
How are you? What's up?
Well, I'm over here at the courthouse trying to submit information about David James Rodriguez, who is being held as a political prisoner in the Santa Cruz County Jail.
Now, David Rodriguez, we know him from putting on events on the beach during the lockdown. I think that's what he became famous for, right?
Yeah, so, multiple facets.
Yeah. What is his crime now? What's he being accused of?
They're accusing him of driving without plates and registration, and he hasn't been convicted of anything, and yet he's being held.
Oh. How long has he been held for those two things? No plates
for
driving without a registration? He's being held in jail for that?
Yes. Well, he had events that followed when he was trying to get to a place of safety so he could get out without them harassing him and have a conversation. They blocked him, broke open his window, pulled him out, and then they said he was resisting arrest or preventing an officer in the function of his duty, and he was just trying to get to a place where he could be safe. And then they keep towing his car because it's not registered.
So you're saying that David Rodriguez is being harassed by the police?
Santa Cruz police?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
This is the sheriff's department, or who?
Well, the sheriff is holding him right now.
So it is the county sheriff.
The county sheriff.
Okay. Yeah, you got to be careful. I mean, the city police and the county police are not the same.
Do you feel like the sheriff?
No, it's both of them.
Do you think there's a personal thing involved? Do they know him? Is it at all personal? Do you think the sheriff knows him or something? Or is there any?
Yes, he's exposing the governmental crime that's going on in this county, and people don't like it. And so now he's facing the consequences of exposing. So he wanted to expose the fact that you don't need registration and you don't need a license plate lawfully in this country.
It's,
unless you're doing business. So if you're doing commerce, you do need it.
Yeah, I remember Steve Jobs used to refuse to have a license plate on his car. He was able to not get in trouble by getting a new car every 6 months, and you would never have to put the plate on it. That's funny.
Well, you actually don't need the plate.
At all, you're saying.
So that's basically what he was trying to get into court to show and prove. And so it's an extortion fee from the government.
Okay,
that's
Mike, you know what?
That's
Tim is also on the line now.
Good. Tim, maybe
can
add a little
Tim to this
details to
conversation
this,
in the brief time that we have. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Yeah, do you hear it?
I hear a lot of wind.
But
there is a bit of a wind. Be careful of your exposure to the wind.
Can I just make one point before Tim gets started?
Yeah, please do.
Can I just make one thing that's really relevant to this? He is being held in solitary confinement. He gets 3 hours in the yard every week. And he's been in there for 10 days, 13 days now, I think.
Wow.
So this is a human rights violation.
I do have a text coming in. Says, is this the guy that's with $15,000 in fines, no license, no registration, no insurance?
None of that has gone through court. He's been convicted of nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't really speak to the details. We're just kind of trying to give you guys a general overview. You know, whether you like David or hate David or whatever, it doesn't matter. Someone is in jail right now unlawfully who has not committed any crimes, and that is the issue. The county, the DA, Jeffrey Rozelle, the chief of police, Andrew Mills, the sheriff, Jim Hart, and the judges want to make an example out of David for speaking out against the lockdowns that have killed countless people due to suicides, overdoses. The lockdowns have caused people to lose their jobs, their businesses. You know, David likes to do research. He likes to research law. He likes to learn what the actual laws are.
And share it with the public, too, right?
There's codes, there's statutes, mandates, rules, policies, orders. These are not laws, okay? And he discovered that these are not laws, and what he found out is these are ways to generate revenue. And the only real laws that are that we don't trespass on people or their property. This includes injury and death, right? So that's it. That's the only real laws there are. Everything else is revenue generation. You know, David has not committed any crimes. County is holding him unlawfully without due process of the law that he is entitled to, whether you like him or not.
Well, no, I hear you. And I imagine that you probably know who he's ticked off as well, who's really upset at him. And this is kind of a personal vendetta, you would say.
Isn't there a law that he has to be charged or they have to let him go?
Absolutely. They're violating every one of his rights all along the way. They will not allow him to sign a lawful document. In that jail, they did not give him due process for he's supposed to be taken to the magistrate right away. He's not supposed to be held. He's supposed to be let go, let out on his own recognizance. He's supposed to get bail. Okay, they're denying him all these things. And they're trying to make him deem him mentally incompetent. David is not mentally incompetent, and everyone knows that. But they know if they can deem him mentally incompetent, he cannot stand up for himself. He cannot defend himself, and he becomes a ward of the state. And that's what they're trying to do to him.
All right, so what are you asking people to be aware of? What are you asking people to do?
So you need a good lawyer? Is that ACLU, maybe?
Mike, you want to take that? Go ahead, Mike.
What we want people to do is we want people to come to the courthouse tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. and bring an affidavit, if you know David, and let him know that he's mentally sound. And if you don't know David and you feel like this is an outrage, that there's a human rights violation going on across the street from this courthouse, then people need to show up in mass and let people know that this isn't going to happen in the dark. We cannot allow this to happen with no eyes on this. I mean, every right has been violated. This is Amendment 8, undue punishment. It's outrageous what's happening.
Wow.
And this is just a man who's trying to let people know that they have rights. And what do? They silence the man who's trying to let everybody know you have rights.
That's right. This is a violation of many, many rights that are secured by the Constitution, but specifically the Eighth Amendment, which guarantees that we will not be subject to cruel and unusual punishment and excessive bail. And in this case, David gets no bail. So we're asking people, if you're interested in coming down, we have affidavits. If you want to sign the affidavit, please contact me. You can reach me at timrwelch@zohomail.com, T-I-M-R-W-E-L-C-H at Z-O-H-O-mail.com. I can connect you with an affidavit. You can fill it out. You can bring it down, or you can mail it in. We'll give you instruction. Just stating that you know David. If you know David, you know him to be mentally competent. He is the freedom fighter in this county. And the authorities don't like that.
Yeah, he's a person of interest to the authorities and someone to take out of circulation, and this is the way it's happened. Now, do you have a good lawyer for this, or does he have someone to represent him through this? It sounds like if there's that many issues going on, it would be a good idea.
He's trying to defend himself.
Defend himself.
He has law experts behind him, numerous law experts that know at least as much or probably more than a lot of attorneys. He's got great support. He wants to defend himself using his counsel that he has surrounding him, and they won't let him. They're forcing a defense attorney on him. They're forcing him to put in pleas. Judges are putting in pleas for him. All this is a violation of the law. All this is a violation of his rights.
Wow.
So this is where we are, and we all need to stand up.
For people who want to become more familiar with David, does he have a YouTube channel or some kind of social media outlet that people can check?
He does. If you search for David James Rodriguez with a Z at the end, you can find him on YouTube. You can find him on Facebook. Obviously, they're censoring him quite a bit, but you can find him on there.
Yeah.
And you can keep up to date with what's going on. We'll be posting more information as we go forward.
Okay, good. And one more time for your email, Tim?
So it's timrwelch@zohomail.com. It's T-I-M-R-W-E-L-C-H at zohomail, zohomail.com.
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
All right. Civil rights in Santa Cruz. Are we still the home of
human rights?
Progressive America.
Yeah.
Yes. Human rights.
Thank you for your help.
You bet.
Yeah, thanks,
bet.
Everybody.
Good luck.
Thanks for doing your part. Keep it in the spotlight.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right.
Well, yeah, that's, folks, that's going on in real time right now. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the court hearing for David is tomorrow at 8 a.m.